Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 183 of the show. I'm your co-host Alexander Gongay Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan, and it's been a big one. I mean, take your pick really. I mean, Christine Sinclair retiring, the GOAT from Burnaby, British Columbia, all-time international goal scorer, hanging up the boots. Meanwhile, the Vancouver Whitecaps played decision day game and are in the playoffs. And you know, it's exciting decision day game. Over 24,000 people, biggest crowd since 2019. And sounds like it's going to be a good one in the playoffs. Of course, they have to head down to LA. For those who've missed it, they're playing LAFC in the first round. Of course, the team they played on decision day. So if you enjoy games against LAFC, you're in luck. If you hate watching games against LAFC, a rough month for you. But you know, once in the second leg, the game's coming to Vancouver. Over 20,000 tickets sold, and there's still a week and a half until the home game. So that could promise to be special up at BC Place. And meanwhile, the CPL final this weekend, Forge versus Cavalry, the OG classic rivalry. Pacific ran out of steam, gave a good push against Cavalry. So no more BC teams left in the CPL. So yes, lots of news across BC. But Sam, I guess before we dive into all that news, starting with the Whitecaps, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, doing very well. Been traveling around a little bit in Scotland at the moment. So yeah, enjoying some beautiful Scottish late autumn weather. No, but it's been fun. You know, checking out Champions League last couple nights, and obviously MLS back on the weekend. Very exciting decision day, even though it didn't work out in the ideal sense for the Vancouver Whitecaps. I think an impressive performance in some ways against LAFC, just ultimately not getting the result over the finish line. As you mentioned, the Canadian GOAT hanging up her cleats. There's a couple special moments coming up for Canadian women's soccer. You know, and an opportunity to see Christine St. Clair in BC as well. I think that will be very special. And then more LAFC, as you just said, Alex. I mean, this is frequent flyer miles between LAX and YVR. These teams have matched up against each other a lot this season, and they're just going to know each other even better after this 2-3 match playoff series. So we don't have to do a lot of additional preview work. I mean, this is the same team, the same kind of situation, but the stakes just ratcheted up a little bit. So we'll talk Vanny contract extension as well. I mean, I feel like it's almost swept under the rug a little bit in the midst of a playoff push, but I don't think it's shocking that Vanny Sartini is back with the Vancouver Whitecaps. He certainly, you know, secured playoffs in 2 out of 3 seasons. Won 2 Canadian championships and overall led some of the most competent Vancouver Whitecaps teams in MLS franchise history. So, you know, I think it makes sense to stay at the moment. So we can talk about that a little bit as well. Is looking forward to diving into it, especially as we head into the start of MLS playoffs. And well, I mean, MLS playoffs already underway with a couple of play-in matches. Just this last night here. So yeah, can't wait to dive in as always, Alex.
Yeah, and I mean, to the playoff point, Vanny Sartini mentioned when his team officially mathematically clinched a playoff spot, he reminded us they'd clinched a play-in spot. So if you're using Vanny Sartini's definition of the playoffs, those start this weekend. So it was like a wild card day yesterday. The playoff field set, SKC joining the fold, beating San Jose despite Daniel's best efforts at keeping San Jose in. Whitecaps fans might feel a bit of comfort that they're not the only team who's been Danielled this year. In my opinion, that guy got robbed for a nominee on Newcomer of the Year, somehow Messi getting in despite playing 6 games. But I digress on award talk. We can discuss that another time. On the other side, the Red Bulls literally making it in on a last minute penalty. They're in on the East. But yeah, so hopefully enjoy playoffs this weekend. Playoffs are fun in MLS, although this new format, we can debate what it means. But I guess the playoffs are always nice because or when your local team is in. And the Vancouver Whitecaps for the second time in 3 years have made the playoffs under Vanni Sartini. And yeah, I mean, just to start, let's look at Vanni Sartini. And this one, it's funny because it's a no-brainer. Like, there's no suspense, no shock. Like, it was kind of funny when, you know, it happened. Like, they announced it in a pretty unique way. I'll say, I can't say I've ever seen a coach's contract extension get announced in the fifth minute of a game that they're coaching at home. It was kind of a surprise, but it was a nice ovation. And, you know, credit to the Vancouver fans for that. Vanni Sartini was a bit teary-eyed and emotional talking about it after the game, saying that was he never expected like a reception like that from 24,000+ applauding and cheering as he got announced as head coach. And it's true, like, it's such a volatile industry. As a head coach, you could be used to being booed, and you know, you're used to things like hashtag Vanny out, or you know, of course we haven't seen that in this case, but you just hyperbole using examples, you see that out, or you see signs. So to receive support from a city the way he has, it is special. But it's a credit to Sartini. And the performances, the results, I mean, they kind of speak for themselves. Back-to-back Canadian championships, you know, because obviously he came in after the 2021 Canadian championship disaster. So he's been perfect in the Canadian championship, brought him to a Champions League, as it was at the time earlier this year. Came up a bit short, shorter than they would have liked, got steamrolled by a good LAFC side. But otherwise in Leagues Cup, they showed well. And you know, in MLS, they've showed relatively well, made the playoffs in 21 last year. Yes, they missed out a lot of injuries, a lot of circumstance. This year, they've kind of done well to put that behind them and just play nice football, handle some, you know, they handled some things along the way that could have easily hurt them, such as Julian Gressel leaving. You know, that could have easily been a departure that sunk them, but instead they made some other acquisitions. Sartini just rolled through, switched his formation, and has been overall flexible. And then you add in what he's brought off the field, like just the fact that he's been so charismatic, so easy to deal with, that endears itself to the media, especially, you know, you compare some of the other coaches you deal with, especially on the NHL side. Of course, there was Bruce Boudreaux last year, but for the most part, sometimes hockey coaches and whatnot can be a bit frosty, a bit hard to deal with. And you look at the way Sartini's just, you know, been so outgoing and, you know, been also great in the community. People know who Vanny is, and that's not always the case with the Whitecaps head coach. It can be a bit of an afterthought, and I think that's been good for the club, especially that he's been such a likable personality. And you know, people remember the cartwheel or the barrel roll against Toronto FC in the final. Like, that sort of stuff endears itself to fans. So overall, I would say it was just such a no-brainer, and that was a surprise in a positive way, because usually a situation like this, like coach nearing the end of a contract year, could they make the playoffs? Could they not? There could be a bit of suspense. Does he leave? Does he go? And instead, it was no nonsense. Business wrapped up before the final match day. And you know what? I think overall we could look. I think that looks to be the right decision at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only time I felt like there was a little bit of peril was, I'm looking back now at the first five matches of the Vancouver Whitecaps season. Two of those at home, they lose 2-1 to RSL on opening day. Then they drop their next match in San Jose. They draw Dallas 1-1 at home. Two more draws after that. And so they're winless through their first five in MLS play. And there was, I think, with some of the experimentation going on, some of the playing out of position, there was some unrest early on in the season about, you know, is Vanny holding back some of the players on this team? Is he getting in his own way? But then they go on a five-game unbeaten streak after that, picking up three wins along the way. And ultimately, really, I think that the second half of the season where they started to find some road form, that's when they took the big step forward. And then there really was no doubt. Once they started to pick up some matches on the road, I think the confidence in this team grew. And I think, to your point, Alex, transitioning from Julian Gressel to Richie Lorette and Sam Adekubi and bringing them in and, you know, reasonably seamlessly integrating them in the way Vanny has is a credit to Sartini. And yeah, I think that ultimately the results speak for themselves, right? I mean, making the playoffs 2 out of 3 seasons, winning both Canadian championships he's participated in, that's nothing to scoff at, and certainly a platform to build upon. It doesn't mean that the club should be completely satisfied with where they've gone in the last couple seasons, but I think certainly a step in the right direction. And I also just think for Vanni Sartini, it's an interesting one because, you know, he was the director of the academy, what was the term they used? Director of methodology. I was going to say chief vision officer because I feel like that gets used in a corporate context. So it's the footballing version of that, the director of methodology. And I think to some extent, you know, Vanny may have been happy to just continue doing that. But when Bart DeSantos was let go, the opportunity came along. He really seized it and has gone forward with it. And I think, I don't see why it couldn't really continue for the foreseeable future here in Vancouver. It seems like Vancouver matches Vanny's personality, his characteristics. He seems to be very well received by the Vancouver crowd, by the MLS-wide crowd. I mean, every time you listen into a MLS TV broadcast and the opposing team is on the call, they always comment on how, you know, gregarious and chatty and talkative and insightful Vanny Sartini is, their impression of their chat with him during the week. So I think that goes a long way to really increasing Vancouver's reputation as a club throughout the league as well, when you have that colorful personality sort of leading the way and speaking on behalf of the club. So, you know, ultimately the tactics have to be good enough, but the personality does matter a bit as well. And yeah, so far both have been strong, and this will be a very stiff test here against LAFC, knowing how much these two sides have seen of each other and knowing how good LAFC is, it's going to be a big challenge to secure 2 out of 3 wins against this team. But I think it's also a tremendous opportunity for Vancouver to do something interesting and special here. And if they're able to get by LAFC, then I feel like the floor is theirs to do what they can the rest of this MLS playoff. So exciting times ahead, no doubt.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess to the last point on all this, I think Vanny Sartini as well, it can be a bit forgotten because of how inconsistent these caps have been. I guess because part of it can be drawn to, you know, Vanny in an extent, you know, some of the issues defensively, as we mentioned, a course of the year, haven't always been addressed. I mean, part of that, I guess, is also on recruitment. Part of that is also on Vanny Sartini maybe not using some of the resources available to him. But overall, other than that, it's also worth noting how well he's coached just in terms of, I think, the underlying numbers, the fact that they took such a big jump this year. Like, the Whitecaps always middling. This year, they've been a top 5 team in expected goal differential, top 2 team in terms of expected goals, you know, that sort of stuff. That's coaching, right? At the end of the day, especially when you look at the attack, of course, they have a Ryan Gauld who's, you know, he was an MVP candidate for a reason. But, you know, you technically don't have a DP striker for half this, like you do for half the season. He struggles, you ship him out, you know, Brian White, he's been fantastic, but that's also, you know, credit to Sartini for making the most of his resources offensively, turning Gressel into an 8, ended up being a good move, moving Ali Ahmed into the midfield as well, playing Pedro Vite a little deeper, you know, the growth of Ryan Raposo. You know, there's been a lot of things, especially on the offensive side of things. Really, the only thing that Vanny will be frustrated with is, you know, the actual goal is not always going in. But as we saw, that kind of regressed to the mean throughout the year, and that's kind of why the Whitecaps are able to make the playoffs comfortably. But those are also signs of a team that was well coached, because overall, if you do well over a 34 game season and you're constantly creating chances, constantly doing the sort of things that the fancy numbers like, that usually means you're being coached well. Of course, you know, within in-game adjustments, all that, those are also key. And it'll be interesting to see how the Whitecaps fare in the playoffs now. To be fair, they've had a pretty good sample size in knockout games, LAFC in the Champions Cup otherwise. We saw it in League's Cup. They gave Tigres a heck of a run. You know, they've done well in the Canadian Championship, so they'll hope to keep it up. So overall, yeah, there's also a lot on the coaching side that Vanny's done well. Now, like you mentioned, it's, of course, the next step is to really take another step forward. Because I think what's key as well is this group is still young, and this group, a lot of it's still locked in for a while. Like Reingold's still in for a couple years. Andres Kubas, they've extended. You know, Takoka's here for a while. Ranko's here for a while. Sam Adekugbe's here for a while. Brian White, of course, some guys might move on, get traded, transferred, yada, yada, yada. You know, we'll see how long guys like Ali Ahmed and Pedro Vite are around. But there's still a young core. And even if those guys leave, any of those guys leave, there's room to upgrade. Like there's still DP slots, U22 slots. So the roster can only get better. And then for Vanny, he'll just continue to have to grow as a coach and show that, okay, we were a top team in the underlying numbers, but we didn't always show it in the actual numbers. We're a bit inconsistent. How do we improve that next year and push and be a top two, top three team? Because based on how they were performing at times this year, they could have been a top two team. It was just consistency was the reason why they weren't. Because at their best, they were no doubt a top two team. So there's goals like that to chase, of course. MLS success, we'll see how they do in the playoffs and then continue that next year. So there's still a lot of growth too. Like it's not like this, you look at this group and you're like, there's some worries in terms of guys aging out or positions of worry. There's enough flexibility that there's still margin to improve the roster, and then for Vanny himself to improve as a coach. And that's also what you want the group to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, as I kind of think about this upcoming playoff matchup, it seems to me that finding a way to get past LAFC, even if they only progress through this round and then they're knocked out in the next, I think would just represent that big step forward for this team and maybe be a stepping stone to, you know, if they're able to really push for an MLS Cup the following season. I feel like just having that little taste of playoff success with this group would go a long way. Because as you said, there's Reingold under contract, Andres Kubas under contract, maybe Pedro Vite for one more season, Ranko Veselinovic, Yoyi Taco. Like, they're going to have this spine of the roster back in 2024. So the more they're able to just get that little taste of playoff success, especially against a really good team in LAFC, I think would be absolutely massive. And then, I mean, you can look at the here and now and the fact that if they're able to get by one of the most dangerous teams in the West, then things kind of open up for them and anything's really possible from there on out. So I think, yeah, not, you know, it's one thing for Vanny to have secured himself as a coach, but then it's another thing to really take yourself from a promising side to a elite side in the Western Conference to be feared. And how they do these playoffs will probably have a significant impact on how they're viewed going into next season, how they're viewed throughout the rest of this playoffs. What they're able to do against LAFC, I think, will have a big impact on that. So, yeah, I mean, Alex, let's take a look back, I guess, at the matchup upcoming against LAFC, but also the match, a 1-1 draw on decision day that was full of interesting moments. Ultimately, the way all the other results went in the Western Conference, the Whitecaps were really without a shot of the top four anyways, but certainly plenty of opportunity to secure all 3 points against LAFC, but ultimately they just weren't quite able to get it done. But yeah, I mean, Alex, you were there. You took in, as you said, the biggest crowd since 2019 at BC Place. So what were your initial impressions of the decision day draw against LAFC?
Yeah, I mean, as for the game itself, it was fascinating, really, was the way to put it, because the game started out relatively cagey. It was, you know, it was both teams even. But then, yeah, the Whitecaps had a good start for a period there, and then it just kind of out of, they had the, what was that? I think they had the first Reingold penalty, and then they miss it, or not miss it, it gets saved, and that just killed their momentum. And I think it was, and the next, you know, it was a sloppy turnover, The ball ends up to Denny Bouanga, way too much time to shoot. He finds a corner with the low shot. On one hand, you know, there's just so much there to break down. Like, okay, you know, yes, it's a great player scoring a great goal. It's the reason why he won Golden Boot. But then also, like, could have been closed down. Could the shot have been stopped, perhaps? But then the Whitecaps, as they do, they responded well and pushed, and they were rewarded with it with a great goal. And then they have a chance to take the lead again, and Ryan Gauld misses the penalty, this time off the post. And I mean, credit to Max Crepeau, former Whitecap Max Crepeau, went for a bit of a different approach. Sometimes you can see goalkeepers try to really unsettle the penalty taker with, you know, screaming and, you know, fear and banging the crossbar and just going unhinged. And Crepeau, perhaps that helps that he knows Gauld well. Of course, they spent a couple months together with the Whitecaps. You know, Crepeau mentioned to the media after the game that, you know, Gauld's a good friend that he loves dearly. So maybe that helped him, that he was able to, on both times, come up to Gauld, hug him, give a bit more of a gentle approach, maybe played some subtle mind games that clearly got to the usually unflappable Scott, who, by the way, had missed two penalties in his career before this game, a total he matched across 90 minutes, and he was yet to miss a penalty for the Whitecaps. And overall, that was the theme of the game. I think it was one where the Whitecaps should have won, even penalty misses aside, other than that late Mario Gonzalez chance. For LA, Vancouver had more of the game, it felt like. But that's kind of the one thing they'll have to worry about in the playoffs, is that there's just been a lot of games like this year where they've been the better team. The numbers indicate it. They're doing the right things, but in the end, they end up drawing or losing. And in the playoffs, the draw part's fine, at least to start, because, you know, there's penalties and whatnot. And even, I guess, later rounds, there are still penalties. But you'd like the Whitecaps to win these games, especially in the best of three, because some of those games aren't going to be forgiving, and you have to find a way to get these over the line, especially when you're going to play well, because when you're heading to LA for possibly two of the three games, you know, LA is going to play well at home. You know, they might dominate you for large patches. So if you're any time that you're outplaying, then we have to take advantage of it. So finally, in a way, it felt like the story of the Whitecaps season, this one. Great moments, moments of frustration, and, you know, how they manage that feels like it's going to be the story of their playoffs, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it, right? Is that the Vancouver Whitecaps are certainly, they're capable of putting in the type of performances necessary to progress in these playoffs. It's, can they sort of deliver on that potential, that expectation in key moments? And, you know, critically, I think, what are they able to do down in LA? Are they able to produce a gutty result the way they did in the regular season down in Los Angeles, or does it go a little bit more like the CONCACAF Champions League, where it's reasonably uncompetitive, and then the, you know, the tie is sort of no longer in the balance when they return to BC play? So the ultimately going down on the road, managing to grind out a result, and not just do enough to potentially earn a result, but actually seat across the finish line is going to be crucial. Looking back at the match on decision day itself, I mean, the first penalty that Richie Lauria drew felt like a bit of a ball don't lie situation, where ultimately Richie does a tremendous job. We were talking about it pre-show, how much of a skill that is to draw the contact. But it's one of those ones where, even though there's a bunch of contact, you look at the play itself and you kind of go, oh, that's just, it's not really a penalty, but you can see why it's called. So, you know, credit to Richie for doing the job, but also I think you can kind of look at it and go, okay, fair enough that Max Crepeau gets down to his left there and makes a save. But then the second one, definitely, you know, stone cold, clear cut for Vancouver. And as you said, Alex, I think that what was so encouraging is that they were able to create the large majority of the chances. They were able to play a real home match against LAFC, where they dictated large phases of play. So and they were able to do it without Andres Kubas as well, which is, considering the host of dangerous attacking threats that LAFC possesses, considering the fact that you've got an engine in the midfield like Ily Sanchez roaming around, I think, you know, it wasn't Seb Berhalter's best performance. I'm as big of a Seb Berhalter homer as anyone, and I'd be the first to say that was not Seb's best showing. So I think you're getting a huge upgrade there if Kubas is ready to go in the playoffs, especially down on the road. You're gonna need that physical destroy and progress type to keep yourself in the match. So and ultimately something too that really stood out to me from LAFC is that Vancouver was able to have a pretty successful night, to look good in a lot of the metrics, look good in terms of the eye test, even though they didn't get the result. And weirdly, Brian White and Ryan Gauld, the two best players for the Vancouver Whitecaps all season, and certainly in the second half, were probably at their, I don't want to say at their worst, but they were well short of the tremendous performances we've come to expect. So I think if you had to pick an off night for those two, decision day wasn't actually a bad one because, Vancouver would have been limited in their potential anyway. So I think you can expect some big showings from Brian White and Ryan Gauld down in LA and then back at BC Place. Alex, you've talked about this so often. You can win as a team at home, but sometimes you need a Ryan Gauld or a Brian White masterclass on the road to find that result. And so I think that's what I'm watching out for this upcoming weekend is the Whitecaps just need to play well enough to keep themselves in the match. And then you get a moment from Brian White, you get a moment from Ryan Gauld. You can secure at least a point, if not all three. I think that what I saw this past weekend is a reasonable platform for to build on to be confident you can have some success going forward. So yeah, curious for your thoughts on all that.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess yeah, some to kind of pack off in terms of like Berhalter in the midfield. The midfield part was interesting because it feels like the Whitecaps did give up a bit. To be fair, it was also interesting to see how passive the Whitecaps were in their pressure. Of course, that's also, them probably acknowledging and respecting LAFC's ability to play out from the back and break lines, but it felt like the Whitecaps were a lot more passive. So I'm curious if that's something they keep up over the course of these three games. Because that's I felt like at times a dangerous game, just given how good LA, they are at breaking lines and whatnot. And it feels like they were close to exposing the Whitecaps a few times. And then the goal was just one of those examples where it happened, and even the late chance. So I think for Berhalter, well, for the midfield, maybe we see a Berhalter Kubas pivot just to really, because that LAFC midfield is a big worry. I mean, you just look at the talent they had in that group. This time they ended up going with Mateusz Bogusz in the midfield, along with Timothy Tillman, who are two very aggressive eights, and then Ilya Sanchez is very good on the ball. So that helped. And then they brought in Kellen Acosta. But yeah, no matter who they pick, they've got options to throw in the middle. So I think being able to stem that midfield tie, and maybe if that means a Kubas Berhalter pivot to help, because it did feel like the Whitecaps did leave a bit more space at time than they would have liked. But oh yeah, then other than that, just gonna be curious to see on the road as well. I mean, on the road, I think we know what we're gonna expect. It's gonna be feisty. The Whitecaps probably gonna sit a little deeper, try to really, like you say, use the individual talent of Gauld. I think someone like Larrea is gonna be huge that was missed last time they played in LA, even though they won. Just having the speed of a guy like Larrea who can make that sort of those straight line runs in transition is gonna be huge, because as we saw, they do send their fullbacks forward a lot. And they don't really have true wingers at the moment. Like Bouanga's playing on the wing, and he's going to cut in, and Vela kind of has a free role. So there are gaps to expose out wide. And then my other question is, how do they approach the game at home? Because like, yeah, I thought they were uncharacteristically more passive in this game, and I think that was, of course, tactically just to, nullify what LAFC does. But I think with LA, there's a dangerous line, especially at home, between sitting too deep. And inviting pressure. So we'll see how they strike that line in the second game in particular. And yeah, I think it's interesting because with this format, in the first leg, you can maybe sit deep and invite pressure, because if you lose 4-0, it's not like a two legs where that 4-0 means something in game two. It is, if from this playoff format, it is forgiving to you from game to game. So I'm also interested to see how they balance game one versus two, because, yeah, the Champions Cup, you go down one or two, and you have to. It's such a funny balance because you have to go for it, but then you risk giving up goals 3, 4, and 5, and then you're screwed. Whereas now, if you go down a goal or two, you can still go for it, because if you lose 4 or 5-0, there's not that much consequence to for the next game other than momentum and whatnot. So, yeah, I think this game, it's funny. It feels like almost for Vanny, at least, it feels like Vanny kept a lot of his cards close to his chest. So it's almost like he felt that this game was going to happen again. And to be fair, these teams know each other. I find it hilarious. They've played each other 4 times now. They'll play each other 3 times. I was checking. They were actually, if the Whitecaps in their super marathon playoff or shootout against Leon in the Leon League's Cup, the 20 rounder or whatever it was, if they won that, actually, they would have played RSL in the round of 32 instead of Tigres. If they beat RSL, they would have actually played LAFC. So there's a chance they would have already played each other 5 times. We were this close to that. So these teams know each other very well, and it feels like at times that showed in this game as well. And that's why I wonder tactically how much variance we'll see, because it feels like the Whitecaps have kind of accepted that, okay, we can't hold the ball as much against LA because they will hit us in transition. But it also feels like they sat back a bit too much at times, and that can be also dangerous.
Well, so it's interesting you mention those League's Cup matches, because the what you're describing definitely is now reminding me and making me reflect on their matches, Vancouver's matches, that is, against Tigres and Leon at home, where they didn't do the normal try to dictate possession. They kind of tried to dictate the game in periods. They'd go through 5-10 minute stretches where they started to press and they would take it to their opponent, but then they'd have those lulls where they sat back, they respected, they kind of let the match come to them a little bit. And I think you're right that it might be, first of all, Vanny just knows that he has to play a little bit differently against these top teams than he can against the CF Montreal at home or a RSL at home, where you maybe feel like you can take the match by the scruff of the neck a little bit more. And then also it could be the cards close to the chest a little bit as well. So I think there's some credit to that I wouldn't expect Vancouver to play entirely differently, even at home in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to go guns blazing and just try to outscore LAFC. That doesn't seem like what Vanny wants to do. But at the same time, I think you're correct as well that with Kubas back in the fold, they can maybe pull off that strategy a little bit better without dropping their lines so deep at times, where you sort of invite all of LAFC's dangerous attackers to almost build up their speed and attack you at full pace, which is a dangerous proposition, right? Just because you're being a little more respectful, you're sitting a little bit deeper, you don't want to put yourself on the back foot willingly. So that's going to be an interesting balance they're going to have to strike. I mean, I think they're gonna go down the road and they're gonna sit deep and they're gonna try to absorb. And how they strike that balance at home may depend a little bit on how that road match goes, even though the score doesn't carry over. So tactically, something to watch. I'm intrigued by the Kubas Berhalter double pivot. They employed it really well against Seattle early in the season, but they haven't used it a ton since then. So I wonder how keen they are for that at this point. One thing I guess we could talk about too is, do we think Jervaine Brown is locked in now for the playoffs as the third center back? It kind of seems to me like that's the direction things are leaning, because I thought it was another decent performance by Jervaine, and ultimately just that kind of feels like where the comfort level is at the moment for the Vancouver backline.
Yeah, I think Jervaine Brown has kind of cemented himself. And like we mentioned, it's been that reliability. We kind of, at least I wondered if we might see something like Laborda home, Brown away, but Brown kind of getting the last few starts kind of indicates where that's trending. And honestly, that's not much of a worry, because I think he's really had some of his most stable performances as of late. So yeah, I'd expect Brown to start, but also I guess the bit of a wrench that I seen out there, and it is a good point, because everyone's fit now. That was the one thing that was fascinating. Everyone except Russell Tybert, I think, is fully fit. So Andres Kubas is back and fit, which is obviously fantastic news for the Whitecaps. Also, that means Sam Adekugbe is starting, you know, is fit to start. So, we that's something we can see. Richie LeRae, of course, has been fit to start, even Junior Hoilett, although I doubt we'll see it, at least maybe against LAFC. But I wonder if that means we could also see some Luis Martins, because I think it's interesting that of all the guys to come off the bench in that final game of LAFC, that, you know, someone like Luis Martins got a run versus a Laborda or a Levante Johnson or, you know, or an Ngando, for example, because the latter three have gotten more runs lately. And I wonder if that's just maybe a bit of getting Martins' fitness, because he could also be an option. And maybe it's something where you see Blackman shift over to the right and it ends up being Martins on the left, to give a bit of that different, like, you know, that left footer on the in the build up, give something a bit for LAFC to watch. So I also think that's a potential wrinkle that maybe can be forgotten, just because it's been so long since we've seen Martins healthy and fit, because he had that little injury in, I think, August it was. So there could be some and who knows, maybe that could provide a bit of a tactical wrinkle for LA to have to think. At least on the ball for Vancouver to have that left-footed defensive ball progressor. So I guess it's not fully written in stone.
No, that's interesting. I mean, there was that patch mid-season where Luis was playing and playing quite well in a back three. And I could see at home for Vancouver, maybe in that second match, if they're looking for a little bit of a different element on the back line, if they want to if they want to sit back slightly more, be a little more cautious in their build-up, but have someone who can really play dangerous balls from that back line, he certainly provides a unique profile there. So it's very interesting. Yeah, I wonder what, if anything, Vandy is saying by the minutes that Martins was able to log on decision day. So that's something to watch going forward. I mean, yeah, I guess the final thing for me, kind of reflecting on the 1-1 draw against LAFC on decision day, would be, I think, just how important Yohei Takaoka's performance is going to be in the spectrum of whether or not the Whitecaps are able to kind of produce or achieve based on their potential. Because I think we talked about it, right? Like, the Whitecaps always, in terms of expected goal difference, they've been really good all season, and often matches have flipped on Yohei Takaoka performances. When Takaoka's been on, they've delivered on those results. When Takaoka's had some mediocre performances, when he's been a bit tired, when it's been, you know, three matches in the week, that's where they've missed opportunities, they've dropped points. I mean, you know, I think the Dennis Guanga goal, you would like it if he gets fingertips to that one, but it's also, I mean, it's the MLS Gold Boot winner. It's well taken from outside the box. I could kind of go either way on that one. So, I don't necessarily have a hot take about Takaoka, other than I just feel like his performances are going to be absolutely crucial come playoffs, because the differences between a good Takaoka showing and a mediocre Takaoka showing, it's quite a fine line between the two, but it really where the Whitecaps live, whether or not they're able to, you know, secure all 3 points or they feel like a bit of a letdown, often hinges on just whether Takaoka is able to get fingertips to a shot or two. It's going to be interesting come playoff time. I think the discourse early in the season about Takaoka was just overwhelmingly positive. And now it's, I think he's still viewed reasonably well in the market, but it's a little bit more mixed. He's had both good and bad showings in the last couple months of the season, coming off two really impressive clean sheets prior to this match. So which Takaoka Vancouver gets in this first round, I think will be a storyline to follow as well.
100%, because as we know, playoffs are won by big players, big moments. And sometimes there's no bigger player than your goalkeeper, because they can, you know, save some shots they're supposed to save, and of course save the shots they're not supposed to save. I think Takaoka is going to be massive, the same way Ryan Gold is going to be massive. Pedro Vite, Brian White, Ali Ahmed, that sort of individual quality. Richie LeRae, of course, with the form he's been in the last few games, which has been quietly been arguably the Caps' best player, which is what you want to see from a player of his quality. And that's honestly, I guess, probably to that point, it's probably the thing I'm most curious to see heading into these playoffs, is because it feels like this is the best individual quality the Whitecaps have had across the board in their team. Because it's worth noting, heading into this, the Whitecaps have never won they've never won a multi-leg knockout tie in the playoffs. The only win they ever have in the playoffs is the one against San Jose and the 5-0, which was essentially a wild card game at the time. So they've kind of had a lack of history in the playoffs. And part of the reason is, you think back, and I mean, yeah, you could think like Seattle 2017, for example. It just felt in that game, or that tie, like, of course, part of it was tactics, not getting what, one shot on target, of course. But also there's the fact that the Whitecaps also didn't have the individual talent to break some of those games open the way that, you know, you want in the playoffs. Even in 2021, that quality was slowly there because they got in the playoffs. And, you know, the likes of Gold and Dahomey and, you know, Brian White, there was options on that team. To be fair, that one, it feels like they let in 3 goals and they were just sloppy defensively. And that's also partly on the individual talent on the defensive side of the game, your center, your defenders, your goalkeeper, et cetera. So I'm very curious to see how Takoka fares, because he obviously could be huge, having a strong goalkeeper performance, the same way that, you know, the likes of your Golds and then your Whites are going to win this tie. So yeah, this is a huge chance for the Whitecaps, like you mentioned, for Takoka to find his form, for them to make their expected goals come true, for their best players to show up. Because yeah, if it feels like if you get all of those things heading in the playoffs, you do well. Like, that's typically the teams that you bet on, are the teams with the good underlying numbers, the teams with the stars, and the teams that have, you know, defenders and goalkeepers that can win you games. And it feels like for the Whitecaps, they've got the underlying numbers. They've got, you know, they've got the stars. I'd say that's fair to say, even though they're not maybe, you know, they're not the Messies or the flashies of the world. It's still Reingold and Brian White and Vite. Those are guys who can win you games. Really, that last question is the defending and goalkeeping. And that's been the question for a while. And it's hard. It's so hard to tell, because there's just so many moments where the Whitecaps have put together great performances defensively. And then there's been other times where it's been very chicken scratch at times defensively. And on the playoffs, if it's the latter, it feels like it could be a long series, especially LAFC. Maybe if you'd drawn one of the other teams you could have drawn in the playoffs, it would be, you'd be a bit more confident. But that's the worry with LAFC, the individual quality that if the Whitecaps have, if they play 270 minutes, all 3 games, and they have 30 bad defensive minutes, feels like they could lose the tie just based on how LAFC's quality is. And that's going to be a big worry.
You're absolutely right. But I think if you're if you're someone in the Vancouver Whitecaps locker room right now, you have to take that as an opportunity where it's like, hey, if we think we're the team we believe we are, we have to go head to head with the best MLS has to offer. And we can't switch off for 25 minutes defensively. We have to be on it for, you know, 180 plus however many minutes it takes. And I think this team does have that capability. It's just a matter of putting it together consistently, as we talked about throughout the season. So, I can't wait for this matchup. I think it's going to be tantalizing, even though it's these same teams matching up for the fifth time this season. I guess just rounding through kind of some of the individual performances, worth giving a shout out to Richie Larea for you can question the provenance of the penalties, but you can't doubt the chance creation, the activity that he's providing for Vancouver. And it feels like match after match after match, he's really been building in terms of his impact within this team. And then the other thing I would say is, I don't know about you, Alex, but for me, especially with Andres Kubas back, Ali Amin and Pedro Vite, that has to be your midfield going into the playoffs. Ali Amin, progression monster. He needs to be getting more looks for the Canadian men's national team, especially how they looked in Japan. Man, they could have used an Ali Amin in some of those moments, and he had a great showing for the Whitecaps. And then I thought Pedro Vite as well, the little combination with Richie there that helped set up the Ali Amin goal was tremendous. And he provides that class in the midfield, that touch, but also the progressive ability that Ultimately, Alessandro Schopp, for whatever reason, has just not shown that consistently enough this season. And again, I think, you know, against LAFC, you're going to be put under an extreme microscope. And I don't think there can be any kind of weakness on show there. And you need to take your opportunities when they come. And it feels like Pedro Vite and Ali Ahmed, they're your best bet in the midfield to take it to LAFC at this point. But yeah, curious, Alex, for your thoughts. You saw them live in person on decision day. So yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, at this point, I don't have much else to say about Ali Ahmed, just because he continues to impress. And there's just so many moments where he gets the ball between the lines and he makes things happen. He drives, he gets going. And I mean, Canada certainly could use that. I don't know how he'd get ignored again for the November window. I mean, you look at the midfield depth of the Canadian men's national team and you look at the form, like it feels like the main choices should be Oustachio Kone and then the likes of Mathieu Chouanier and Ali Ahmed. Will that happen? Well, we'll have to see, but that's a whole other discussion for for another day. So yeah, the Whitecaps have to lean into that, especially against this LAFC midfield. The one advantage that the Whitecaps can have against a group of a bogus, you know, Sanchez and Tillman, that Tillman and Bogus, you know, Bogus watching him defensively in person, he struggled at times. Like he was just a bit all over the shop, and Tillman as well, very front facing attacker. Like he's almost, as an eight, he almost felt more of a striker than an eight at times, the way Tillman drifts forward, that space to exploit. And the Whitecaps just didn't do it enough. Like there was a few times where Ahmed got going and the isolated Ilie end up getting a yellow. Like they did well to, you know, to do that. And it just feels like, cause I'm pretty, if like I'll check now. Cause of course, you know, it's been a few days since the game and whatnot, but I'm pretty sure Ilie got his yellow. Well, Bogus got his yellow in the 57th. Ilie got his yellow in the 68th. Like there was time to really take advantage of the fact that both LA or two of the three LA midfielders want a yellow and the Whitecaps didn't. And they'll need to take advantage of those sorts of matchups, because in a playoff that matters, right? That sort of stuff matters. So Ahmed will be key. And then, yeah, I think Vite, Ahmed, Kubas is probably the preferred choice, all things considered equal. I think Schoff at this point, he's brought a bit of that defensive solidity, but it's just the ball progression. It feels like sometimes at times the Whitecaps, it's more important that ball progression than that defending. Of course, I think there's instances on the road where I think Schopp will have a big role to play in this series, but Vite, Ahmed and Kubas feels like there's enough defensively between Vite and Ahmed that can be a bit underrated, a bit forgotten about. But yeah, if not, I mean, as we've mentioned, don't be surprised if a Kubas Berhalter perhaps makes an appearance. I'd be curious to see who the third member alongside that would be. Like, is it a Schopp and they go full on, like, muck up the midfield? Or more realistically, which of an Ahmed and Vite would join a Kubas Berhalter pivot if it goes there? But because, yeah, I do think they need to be a bit front-facing, just because there's going to be that space to exploit if Bogus and Tillman are similarly lax defensively as they were in Vancouver.
And to me, Alessandro Schopp feels like a great second half. You're up 2-1, lock things down, be sensible on the ball, keep the lines organized. Like all the things that Schopp's been really good at this season seem to suit those pressure moments late in matches where you need someone to just sort of marshal proceedings. But I think, yeah, as you said, if the likes of Bogus and Ilie are not necessarily looking to do the engine in the midfield. You know, so Bogus is trying to get forward. Tillman's trying to get forward. Ilie's sort of left on his own on an island sometimes. I think you want Ahmed and Vite to stretch and to punish that. And especially with LAFC liking to, you know, they like to push everyone forward when they can. I think you want someone that can slip into those spaces and, you know, create some of those dangerous counter chances that Vancouver is still able to really hit on at times. So, yeah, I mean, Alex, any other specific matchup thoughts about LAFC Vancouver Whitecaps, or does that kind of cover it? I mean, I feel like, again, as we said off the top, you know, there's less content here because we've talked so much about these teams recently. But yeah, any final things to empty the notebook here on the matchup?
Yeah, I can't say I have too much otherwise. Of course, watch out for Vela and Buanga. They've had fun against the Whitecaps in the past. Feels like Vela scores almost every time he plays the Whitecaps, or at least close. somehow this year. I think he has two or three goals against the Whitecaps. Bouanga has, I think, four goals against the Whitecaps this year, so keep an eye on them. Otherwise, Max Crepo is going to be up for this, so watch out for that. I was kind of a few weeks ago is joking that, oh man, like when I saw LAFC Caps decision day, Max Crepo was just coming back from injury. I'm like, man, I feel like Max Crepo has something up his sleeve. And I didn't think it would be saving a penalty and forcing Rangel to miss another penalty. But it's, you know, it just kind of, it shows how up for it he's going to be. He was a bit coy when asked about it after, you know, he's like, of course, the booze and, you're motivated by that. But he's like, it's not really that big of a deal, but it is kind of a big deal. Of course, you're not going to admit that and give fuel to the fans that way. But yeah, I love it. If anything, if you keep your cards close to the chest, because if you do love it, maybe by, agonizing a bit more, they'll boo more. So yeah, I'd say just keep an eye out for Crepo, because yeah, those links are obviously, Tristan Blackman, a former LAFC guy, Max Crepo and Mark DeSantos, former Whitecaps guys, those sorts of connections, it'll mean a bit extra for either of those players if they end up winning on their respective sides. So it's funny to see that sort of familiarity, and definitely feels like Max is, he's going to love it.
Certainly. I mean, mixed feelings about that one, because, really have enjoyed all my interactions with Max over the years. But obviously, I think for supporters and everyone in Vancouver, the way that ended is, leaves a bit of a bitter taste, right? And then Max, I think, as well, as you mentioned, he definitely lives for these moments. He likes the handbags at the end of the match. We saw that recently. I think part of Max's ethos as a keeper is finding those emotional ways to get himself involved in the match, right? It's like not just about being there between the sticks and stopping the ball. It's about sort of asserting himself on the overall proceedings. And that's something to watch out for in these playoffs is, what kind of impact is a Max Crepo able to have for LAFC? Because that really is when they're truly dangerous. I mean, we talked about LAFC the last couple seasons before they had Max Crepo, and that was the glaring weakness, right? Is that they had so many good elements to their team, but man, they need to find a goalkeeper that could provide some consistency, and they're a dangerous unit with Crepo at the back there. So something to watch out for. But I also think that Brian White and Ryan Gauld will have something to say about that these next couple matches. I think they're especially getting skunked on decision day. They're due for a couple to find the back of the net. So I mean, with that, Alex, do we want to put in some predictions for the opening playoff matchup on the road down at what used to be Bank of California Stadium, what's now BMO Fields, I believe.
BMO Stadium. BMO Fields still is owned by TFC.
Ah, that's right. Okay. Couldn't remember the designator there on the end. So BMO Stadium. Still not used to that one. Still want to call it Bank of California. But yeah, Alex, I mean, with everyone fit except for Russell Tybert, with these two teams knowing each other so well, how do we feel like this one's going to go down in LA on the weekend? You got it right in decision day. So you've got the hot hand at the moment.
Yeah, it's tough though. It's so tough because it's like the fact. Yeah, like the fact that the Whitecaps got skunked the first time they went to BMO, but they did well the second time they went to BMO. They've played LAFC relatively. Like, what was wild is that the Whitecaps got obviously swept aside in Champions Cup. Had the Whitecaps scored any of those two penalties and won, they would have swept LAFC in the regular season series. So it's obviously a very weird matchup between these two. I think because it's playoffs, I think it's because it's cagey. They know each other so well. It's so familiar. I'm going to go 1-1 again. I think it's just going to be low event, playoff game, feel each other out, draw, goes to PKs in there. I think LA is just going to have the edge. Like, this Whitecaps team is kind of, feels like they've struggled a bit for PKs this year. One of the reasons is that beyond Ryan Gauld, there's not a clear second taker. They showed against Leon that there are some guys who can step up and score to take a few. And then, yeah, more importantly, Yohei Takaoka. He obviously made that great save against, who was it, Lewis earlier this year on Colorado, whoever it was. I don't remember often. Maybe it was Rubio. But other than that, as we saw against Leon Takaoka as well, he's not the, you know, biggest penalty saver. And because of that, I think Crepo has shown to be a pretty decent penalty saver in recent years. He's really improved that side of his game. So I think LA will have the slight edge between that and the fact that their murderers row of PK takers can be the likes of, you know, Buonga, Vela. You know, Ilya Sanchez, his record sucks because we know that very well because of that commercial he's in, but he scored the winning penalty last year. I'm sure he'll have the nerve. Chiellini, I bet you will take a good penalty. And you look at the Whitecaps, there might not be that same confidence across the board. So I'd say 1-1 LA edges it on penalties.
Very, very interesting. I can't go with that. It was exactly what I was thinking. I was going to go 1-1 draw as well. I feel like these two teams just run it back from decision day. But, you know, I'm going to go with the upset in the Pens. I do feel like this LAFC team this season, in some big moments, in some big spots, they've maybe just like not had that clutch factor you would expect. So, maybe there's a shock penalty missed from a Buonga or a Vela in a key moment, and the Whitecaps are able to just eke it across the line in LA. So I'm gonna go 1-1 through the match, but the Whitecaps get through on a surprising penalty shootout to secure a massive road win. And I'm curious too, you know, especially if a couple of these matches are decided by PKs, how we feel about the playoff format. It's certainly interesting to have these, you know, these one-off, these individuated matches decided by Pens at the end of 90 minutes. We saw it in the League's Cup, and now we're going to see it again in the MLS Cup playoffs. So, you know, certainly like I think an LAFC, if they're able to really dominate at home, but they're only able to get a 1-1 draw out of it, and then they were to lose on PKs or vice versa, if the same kind of thing happens at BC Place, how are those teams going to feel about the way the playoffs are set up? So, I think we both have a very similar idea of how this match is going to go. But with PKs at the end of it, the result being in the balance like that, you never quite know what could happen. And as you said, Alex, I think it's a strong point. You don't want to plan for this if you're Vancouver going in, but if you do get blown out 4-0, all you have to do is take care of your home match, right? And then worry about the rest later. So that really does change the whole mantra, the whole kind of mental exercise going in. It's not a two-legged thing where, a bad result in the road would completely devastate you in the way it might have in past seasons.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, I hate just because it was put out to me this morning. I saw on Twitter an MLS fan from a different team mentioned that there's a possibility a team goes out with a record of 1-2 because they lose 2 penalty shootouts, and that it's especially hilarious, or sorry, not 1-2, 1-2, and the team could advance with 1-2, and it's also hilarious because a team could lose that game 6-0 and then advance.
I was gonna say it could you know, LAFC could blow out Vancouver 4-0 in one match, lose twice on penalties, and be eliminated. And certainly if that happens to a team in these playoffs, there will be a substantial discourse about,
as there should be,
the legitimacy of that format. But we only have to worry about that when the time comes and if it affects the Vancouver Whitecaps in a negative way. So, one thing at a time in that respect.
Yeah, and I mean, on that note, I think that pretty much wraps up the Whitecaps chatter. First game this weekend at BMO. Then on Sunday, November 5th, a Sunday game at BC Place. My goodness, your eyes do not deceive you, mine do not deceive me. Is that the first one they've had all year at BC Place on a Sunday? I think it might just be because everything else has been on a Saturday. There was only one early game. It was against Dallas in March. Everything has been Saturday or Wednesday, 7:30, even the Canadian Championship, which of course has to be in midweek. So your eyes do not deceive you. And then the third leg is on like a Friday or something weird at BMO Stadium. I think Friday or Saturday. So yeah, should be a good one. But another area where there's been a playoff, certainly less debate about three-legged formats, maybe debates about the format itself, but you know, it's continued to be entertaining, the CPL playoffs. Unfortunately, there are no more BC teams as Pacific fell 2-1 to Cavalry in the second semifinal. Of course, Cavalry and Forge was the first one. Cavalry lost. Forge, in their fifth straight final, they're hosting. Cavalry, having finished top two, got that second chance at home. They took advantage of it. They took care of business against Pacific. Ali Moussi had quite the performance, goal and assist. Pacific made things interesting. They could have tied. Marco Carducci made a phenomenal save. That's a white cap link, of course. Former cap Marco Carducci made a massive save on Adonijah Reed in like the 90th minute. That would have made it 2-2, would have sent it to extra time. So it's a thoroughly entertaining game, but in the end, Cavalry advances, and that feels like it's a fair result. And I mean, ultimately, the final between the top two teams, Forge and Cavalry, seeds number 1 and 2. Forge, the most successful playoff team in the league history. Cavalry, the most successful regular season team in league history. Kind of feels like a fitting matchup, and kind of crazy that we haven't seen that matchup in a final since year one in 2019. It's been a long wait for this too, which is kind of funny because it feels like Cavalry and Forge are always playing each other in big games, but not in finals, at least not for a while.
Yeah, I think a fitting, albeit maybe unexciting matchup for the West Coasters, right? I think that, you know, I was certainly craving the possibility of Pacific going on the dream run and pushing into the finals, and certainly an opportunity to knock off Forge again would have been massive and would have been really interesting. But ultimately, it does feel like the two most consistent teams throughout this CPL season, the two most reliable teams throughout the CPL season, are in the final. And for Cavalry, it's a second chance, right? It's this opportunity to redeem what's been a great season that had one really disappointing performance, that they, because they finished first on the table, they have this chance to overcome it, to erase that from the memory. And to finally get this Forge, you know, this shadow that's been looming over them for their entire CPL existence, they could really exercise the demons in this final. So I think that's fantastic, even if it maybe doesn't have the West Coast flair some will have been hoping for. I also just want to say too, you know, despite the way it ended, I think a massive credit to Pacific for regrouping come playoffs, because this was a team in a bit of disarray, a bit of dysfunction, and they were able to turn things on when it really mattered. No one, I feel like, exemplified that more than a Kakuta Maune, who all of a sudden just turned it on and was an elite performer come playoff time. I also think a credit goes to James Merriman for sometimes during the regular season, it almost felt like his tactics got in the way of Pacific just getting the most out of their best players. Who were their best attackers? What was their best formation? Who should start? Who should come off the bench? There was a lot of discourse, and I feel like really throughout the playoffs, broadly speaking, Pacific got those tactics right and ultimately was just beat by a good Cavalry team on that final day for them. So I think a solid season for Pacific. They'll look back on it certainly as missed opportunities, but I think an exciting group that played some really, really great football at times, Alex, this season. I mean, there were moments where Pacific looked absolutely unbeatable. They weren't able to sustain it ultimately. So I think when you look at both British Columbia CPL teams, there's a group that showed huge title-winning potential and just couldn't put it together consistently enough. And then there's an expansion side that all of a sudden really turned things around near the end of the season. And if they're able to push for playoffs next year, if they're able to build on what they did at the end of the season, there's reason to be excited as well. So I think you have to view both those teams positively as you finish the season. I'm glad that Pacific was able to have some playoff success, because it really looked like things were were turning off the edge of a cliff near the end of the season, and they were kind of able to at least somewhat keep it together. And as I mentioned, I think the final will be massive as well.
Yeah, and I mean, credit to Pacific for their consistency, because look, I think Forge and Cavalry have, you know, they've been the best two teams in the CPL over the course of 5 years. Look, that CPL 2021 team, I think, gives any team a run for its money. Just look at the names on it, like from, you know, Lucas McNaughton, Taron Campbell, Manny Aparicio, you know, Josh Hurd, Marco Bustos. You had, you know, guys like Ollie Bassett coming off the bench, Alessandro Hojabapur, Callum Irving, like Tom Amerziger, ridiculous team, Caden Chung. Like, you can go through the list. It's an absurd team. And I think that team gives anyone a run from its money, such as 2019 Cavalry, 2023 Cavalry, you know, 2022 Forge, 22 Ottawa. I think that Pacific team gives anyone a run for its money. But they've also been very consistent. They're the only team other than Forge or Cavalry to finish top four at least three times. They've been in the semifinals 4 years in a row. I've been amongst the top four. No other team has come close to that. You know, they've consistently been pushing for a regular season title. Like, those are good things, especially because Pacific, what has been fascinating to see is they've remained true to their identity since day one. Day one, we heard it. Trust the kids, trust the kids. And then year one, it didn't work out. They did. Maybe didn't have, they had some issues coaching, but they backed their youngsters. And then in year two, they fired their coach at the end of year one, brought in Pamaduca, had some success. Pamaduca left. A bunch of those players left, like McNaughton, Chung, Campbell, Hojabapur. It's Bustos. Like, you think it's going to hurt them, and they just retool their team, but continue to play kids as well. Like, that's the thing about this year. That's also fascinating. Of course, they had a team filled with guys in their prime, and that's why maybe it's a bit disappointing, and almost in a sense, not the playoff run, because they certainly showed up well there, but certainly the regular season, it felt like this team had the depth to do more. But also, they stayed true to their mantra. Like, they had the youngest goalkeeper in the league, getting minutes, learning on the job. They had the likes of a Paul Amadume learning. They've got other youngsters like a homegrown Sean Young, who, yeah, he's not a U21, but that's still a great success story. So they've stayed true to that, and I'm excited to see what next year looks like for them, just because it feels like they're going to retool, and I'm excited to see some of the intra-league signings they made, because they showed last year they don't mess around in that regard. And then as for Vancouver, it's, yeah, similar situation in the sense that, you know, year one, it went honestly better than most could have expected, because technically they're the first expansion team to properly enter in a full season, because the other teams all entered year one at the same time. So there's always going to be some that do well, some that didn't. Ottawa entered in the COVID year, so they, you know, that gave them a different set of circumstances. Vancouver came in logically anything but eighth would have been a success. They finished seventh. Like, that can't be forgotten. They were one of the hottest teams in the league. They've got some good core pieces, which I think is sometimes hard to get as an expansion team, because usually you just start with so many scraps and it's just building up. Okay, which guys can overperform? Who can we persuade? But right since day one, they've built a core of guys that you look and you're like, okay, guys like Batar, Irving, Chung, Romeo, like, that's a good spine to build around. Even, yeah, if Diaz sticks around, etc., that's a good core. Okay, how do you supplement it? How do you bring in depth? Because that felt like almost the bigger issue at times. So, yeah, I think it would be exciting. I mean, in a dream world, next year you get a Vancouver Pacific playoff matchup, or you get, you know, some sort of thing where they both make the playoffs or something. But and it's certainly not impossible, which is exciting for fans of both teams.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I look too at the Canadian Championship, and obviously Pacific's made some noise the last couple of seasons, but can you get Vancouver FC to play a little bit more of a prominent role? Also, can you get a League One BC team to replicate the kind of showing, the kind of success that TSS Rovers was able to achieve? I think it just helps grow the prominence of the sport in the province, and kind of, you know, gives those moments for young kids in BC to really look up to and to strive towards. So, yeah, looking forward to the next season for the BC CPL teams. Yeah. I'm just very much looking forward to this CPL final as well. I think, you know, as we talked about either way, really good storylines, even though it's not necessarily, what you would have wanted for the BC teams, I think, tremendous opportunity for Cavalry And obviously for Forge, it's sort of like the evil reign of Bobby Smirnotis would continue for another season, lording over the rest of the Canadian Premier League. Obviously, both the CONCACAF spots wrapped up as well at this point for those two teams. So, you know, they're looking to build on that going into next year as well. So, man, it's been a tremendous CPL season. And the final, I think, is, you know, provided it's a good one, with it, which I think it will, is really going to cap the season off in a big way. So that's kind of CPL talk. We've mentioned it off the top of the show, but we have one big thing to talk about remaining, which is the GOAT, Christine St. Clair, wrapping up her international career. And, you know, despite it sounds like needing a little bit of persuasion, she is going to play a couple more matches. Doesn't want the, you know, the fanfare and the massive send off, but obviously has been talked into playing a couple more times for Canada, which should be a tremendous, couple tremendous occasions to celebrate an amazing career, not just for a women's footballer, but for any footballer. So, really looking forward to that. And also I think we've talked about on this show, Alex, you've probably talked about on Northern Football. I think it's also a moment for the Canadian women's program to move forward to the next era, right? I mean, it's been Christine St. Clair's show, and deservedly so for a long time, when it comes to the Canadian women's national team. And now, some new players have to take that weight in their shoulders and really carry this team forward into the future. We kind of saw that at the Women's World Cup, that Canada wasn't ready for prime time just yet. They have some work to do in that department. And I think this finality now, not only to an opportunity to celebrate Sinclair, but then an opportunity to move forward to the next era is just important for this program. So exciting times for the women's national team, and just a massive congratulations to, as you said, Burnaby, BC native Christine St. Clair for such a tremendous career and such an inspiration to so many young girls, who are already part of the national team setup, but then also young girls for years to come as well.
Yeah, and even I would extend that to say to all young Canadians and any lovers of soccer, because
absolutely, yes.
Growing up, I mean, especially, you know, the growing up, the women's national team were always kind of the main force around here. They're the ones that pack stadiums and won games, and of course Sinclair scoring goals for fun. Just, you know, that you think of the 2015 World Cup and how special that was. Yeah, it just feels like, yes, Canadian sporting icon, Canadian soccer icon, Canadian icon. And yeah, I mean, the stats speak for itself. Over 300 caps for Canada, 190 goals, the most all-time internationally. Absurd amount of goals. Just she scored in 2000, and she's been scoring up till, you know, 2022. That's 23 different years of goals from Christine St. Clair. And hey, I have a feeling she'll score over the next four games and make it 24 years of goals or whatever the number is. All absurd stats. You know, has won an Olympic gold medal, has been finished fourth at a World Cup, won a CONCACAF championship, all sorts of accolades for Canada. The good news is, if you do miss out on the celebration tour game, she is playing for the Portland Thorns for one more year, where she's a legend there, has won a couple, you know, trophies, including Shield and NWSL trophy, a couple of them, if I'm not mistaken, in both regards. Hoping they're looking to be back-to-back champions this year. And so, you know, it's Portland, you know, there's markets in Seattle, in the NWSL, there's markets in New York, etc. So you can still go see her play for one last time, but it'll certainly be weird to not see her wearing that maple leaf, because you think of the maple leaf, you think of Christine St. Clair, really. It's hard to think who else you'd think of when it comes to that, you know, the Canadian soccer maple leaf. And yeah, this farewell tour, it's well-deserved. It's kind of hilarious, and it's like so Sinclair-y in a way, because she's always been like, you know, deflect the attention, talk about the teammates, break a record, you're talking about the teammates. Like, you know, it's like, Christine, you've played 300 caps, you lead the world in goals. Like, it's not, you don't just lead Canada, you don't lead this, you lead the world in goals internationally. You aren't going to retire quietly. I found that hilarious, which is like, yeah, I was trying to leave, and my friends and family, like, come on, you got to do it. And so, yeah, all I would say is to everyone in Montreal this Saturday, Halifax next weekend, both which are both going to be special occasions, and then Victoria on December 1st. It's also going to be special. And then the one where I really hope it sells out, BC Place, December 5th. Hopefully all of you get out to all of them. If there's some who do, fair play. If some who get out to some of them, I'll go to half of them. I'll go to Victoria. I'll go to Vancouver. I would love to go to Montreal, Halifax. Just timing didn't work out for other reasons because I'll be going to the CPL final. Hopefully enjoy the occasion. It's going to be special to see just Sinclair do her thing. And what I like is that she'll just want to go out her own way. She'll just want to go out, play hard. I'm sure she'll put in some hard tackles, take some shots, and go out the way that she came in, which is, you know, fighting for her spot on the team, even if she's already retired. And yeah, all I'd say is hopefully that last game is sold out. It's the occasion she deserves. And lastly, hopefully they can find a way to sneak Sophie Schmidt in as well, because she quietly retired. She had the retirement Sinclair gotten. You can't forget Schmidt as well as an icon who is also from BC. So it'd be fitting if they find a way to convince her to play alongside Sinclair in that final game at BC Place, because it would be nice to see it send off two BC legends if possible. Although Sinclair certainly deserves a send-off of her own for obvious reasons.
I'm sure they will. I feel like that's obligatory, especially the last two matches at home in BC for those two. And yeah, I thought you made a great point that sometimes it's easy to forget, right, that the men's national team has risen to prominence over the last couple seasons, but last couple of years. But for so long before that, really, if you're looking for elite, top of the world football from Canada, it was the women's national team and Sinclair and Schmidt leading the charge in that regard. So I think, you know, when you look back, not just at the last couple of years, but you look over a broader period, as you said, the impact that they've had not only on the women's game in Canada, but the game as a whole has been massive. It's, you know, kind of immeasurable, and you can certainly, you can argue, but I think you not only could you argue, but you should argue that the women's success has impacted men's success in this country as well. What the men's national team has been able to do recently is a credit to the women's team as well, which is why those two groups working together in terms of you know, kind of getting the right players agreements, working with Soccer Canada moving forward, it's so important that everyone's part of that process together. So interested to see what Christine St. Clair will do post-career as well, once she's done with the Portland Thorns. What kind of role could she have in Canadian soccer if that's something she chooses to be a part of? Same thing with Sophie Schmidt. I think interesting times ahead for the women's program, for women's soccer in Canada, with a possible and certainly a planned women's league upcoming. As you mentioned, she's going to finish out her career with the Portland Thorns, and that makes me think how great would it be to have a club team for Christine St. Clair to play on. But hopefully in the future, that's going to be something on the table for a lot of these women. So I think a great send off. Nice that it's around the country as well. Variety of markets. It's fantastic as well that it's not just Vancouver, but they're also heading over to the island. Love to see the smaller stadiums, those intimate environments get some love, because they make for great matches as well. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to the CPL final, the start of MLS playoffs. If we dismiss the wildcard matchups, certainly the start of Vancouver's MLS playoff journey. So some very good football coming up as we wind towards the holiday season here. It's the business end of the schedule, and we hope everyone enjoyed listening to this podcast, and that you'll be with us the rest of the way through 2023, because we're creeping up. It's almost the month of November, and this year has flown by already. So we appreciate your support, and look forward to some more podcasts here before the year is over.
Yeah, and I guess one last Sinclair thought to end off on a positive note. Next year, 2024 season, her last season with Portland. Hey, you know what? What's potentially starting in 2025? The Project 8 Sports League? She did say last year with Portland, not last year as a professional. Come on, let's go. Sinclair to Project 8. I mean, she's already been involved in the launch, but we'll see if that ends up happening. Of course, it feels like she'll figure in anyways, given that she's already lended a hand to, you know, our former teammate and friend, Diana Matheson, in that. Otherwise, Sinclair did do a press conference today, and she was asked, are you going to continue in the sport? She says, no doubt. I love the sport. I want to keep giving back. So Canada, hopefully it is some, you know, in some form with Canada and not below the border. Of course, she has great attachment there. You wouldn't blame her if she is, but given her importance to the sport up here, it would be nice if she can continue to give back directly. Although, you know, she's going to continue to give back for a long time for her achievements and other. So excited to see that. But on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongirizik, on Instagram and Threads at AGR on the case. And yeah, we do enjoy every one of you who's listened to the show as of late, left a review, left a like on and all that on social. We do appreciate that as always. And, you know, we hopefully this is you continue to enjoy this time of the year, because again, the fall, it's always a good time to be a North American sport fan. And that's no exception in this beautiful sport where the ball is round. So on that note, I'll throw it to Sam to close off the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robert on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. We'll do a shameless plug for our friend Caleb Wilkins. Wrote a very interesting article on Ryan Raposo, how the eye test and the numbers don't always match up. I'd encourage you to check that out. And there's going to be some content, probably by the time this podcast is up, a full breakdown of WFC 2, now that their season has come to an end, all the players, their prospects going forward. So that's awesome. It's certainly, if you want to get into the weeds about what's been going on the development side for Vancouver. So I encourage you to check that out, in addition to all of our pre and post-match coverage, as always. So yeah, thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Obviously, you can find us at thethirdsub.ca. Third Sub on all our social platforms. And yeah, enjoy the weekend, everyone. We'll chat again soon.